Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting high and it's dying.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke pot, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio. Yes, Butch Otter, the gay weasel. So, according to the Idaho Statesman, the largest paper in Boise, that the Idaho governor wrote to Donald Trump, begging him to enforce the federal drug laws in Oregon and Washington and Nevada to stop their weed, their legal weed, and I suppose their medical weed, from pouring over the Idaho border. So all this weed pours over the Idaho border and it causes terrible problems for Idaho. Why, they have to spend their money to arrest people and lock them up and watch over them and feed them and take them to trial and get them court-appointed attorneys and then put them on probation and watch over them or put them in a cell and pay for that. And then they got to deal with all the paperwork and the time and the cop has to show up. And yeah, oh my God, what a pain in the ass that is. Of course, the easy solution, of course, is to legalize marijuana in Idaho. Right? But no. No, that makes entirely too much sense. Idaho feels the need to maintain its marijuana prohibition. And there's not a logical argument for it. There's none. They have no logical argument. If they did, they wouldn't have been chicken in showing up to debate me last year. But they believe all this reefer madness nonsense. They believe this crazy stuff. They believe that when the Rocky Mountain high-intensity drug trafficking area puts out their report that says more kids in Colorado are smoking weed and, oh my God, the roads are full of dead people because of pot. They believe that stuff. They don't believe any of the rest of the reports that come out. Volumes and volumes of reports showing that the sky hasn't fallen. They instead trust the cops whose very existence depends on there being a Rocky Mountain high-intensity drug trafficking area. So they have a little bit of a bias in trying to say that things really suck. It's the kind of stuff these Idaho people will believe. There's nothing you can do, nothing you can show them. Idaho is what America was. Set your clock back 40 years. As far as they're concerned, this has nothing to do with medicine or reducing the opiate epidemic or harm reduction or any progressive move like that. This is a culture war. I come from the state that leads these kind of culture wars, man. And the Idaho culture war against weed is rooted in Western individualism, in cowboy mentality, in alcohol culture, in anti-immigrant culture, in anti-liberalism. To Idaho, marijuana represents long hair and hippies and free love and liberal politics and communism and all of that. Idaho is what America was. Set your clock back 40 years. They're still in the mid-70s. They're still in the malaise. They're still in that era of hating everything about leftism, leftists, liberalism. Idaho is one of the most reliably Republican states in the country. And their attitude toward marijuana reflects that. So if Idaho is going to make any change in its marijuana reforms, it's going to have to be couched in that culture. Any move to try to change Idaho law that depends on Idahoans thinking something good about marijuana has got a uphill climb. And I'm talking about medical marijuana. If you're going to try to convince Idahoans that medical marijuana is a good thing, and I know they'll say, oh, there's a poll, 74% of Idahoans support medical marijuana. Now, when people answer those polls, they answer them based on what they think medical marijuana is. So they might think, oh, well, yeah, if someone's got cancer or terminal AIDS and they go see a legitimate doctor who's been treating him for a year or two or three or five, and they see him at the hospital and everything's legit and he says that marijuana might help him, yeah, they're for that. 74% will agree with that. You show them a tent at an outdoor festival for a rap concert where some dude in scrubs is listening for 5 minutes to some other dude talk about his anxiety and then writing out a recommendation for him on the spot so he can get into the medicated area to watch the rap concert. No, you're not going to get 74% support for that in Idaho.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Check it out. I got down there early. There, I'm walking in. Let me.
Ow.
Ow!
Big white.
Ow!
These kids are morons, right? They'll smoke or do anything, man. Anything that's they think's hip.
Opens up his jacket. A medicine cabinet, bro. Oh my god, I get in there.
He's like $5. $5 for, you know, a blue cap, something like that.
You got it, then you sell them bigger later.
Yeah, for free this time. Nope. Al will hook you up, peer pressure.
I mean, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, look at me, I turned out okay. You know, you gotta use your brains, right?
We're gonna hook Pedro up, man. Yeah, he'll puke a little bit. It'll be good for him, though.
He will hook you. What's up?
Eyes are like, ah!
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
If the price of the pot matters, you're smoking too much pot.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Cool.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from DanMichaelsAudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. As we take a look at the rest of our news stories here in Hour 2, a quick reminder that we've got a phone number here at Delta 9 Studios. Our phone line is right there. See it? See it? Right there. Right there in the corner. Right there. See? Right there. See that big block? Yeah. Anyway, phone number here is 650-LEGAL-MJ. 650-534-2565. If you got any comments, questions, concerns, or complaints, we'll be glad to talk about it. But if not, I've got some stories in the hopper to talk about that I found very interesting in the world of marijuana. This first one, coming out of the Los Angeles Times, talks about the California Highway Patrol. You know, Chips, Ponch, and John, right? The California Highway Patrol is forming a task force to develop methods for identifying when drivers are impaired by marijuana or prescription drugs under legislation that moved forward on Tuesday. The study would also look at technology for measuring impairment by the chemical THC under legislation proposed by the California Police Chiefs Association. The bill is called Assembly Bill 6. Now, I welcome this bill. I welcome all scientific study into finding out how to determine whether or not a driver is impaired on marijuana. And the reason I do is because the more they study this, the more they'll come to realize is that there is no study or scientific method to determine when someone is too impaired by marijuana based on a chemical in their system. They want so badly to have a marijuana breathalyzer. The cops are freaking out over the idea that they won't have some little magic test that automatically tells them someone's guilty and they don't have to go through the trouble of proving it. Prosecutors are freaking out that all of the easy marijuana bust cases the California Highway Patrol would bring them, where it was a slam dunk to get some sort of DUI, isn't going to be so easy anymore now that marijuana is legal. And they desperately want that magic number, that magic limit that tells them that someone's automatically too stoned. And they're not going to get it. That's why I love it. Please throw money at this. The Prop 64 earmarked some of the California tax funds for marijuana specifically to study this. Oregon is doing the same thing. Specific funds to study marijuana and impairment on the road. Great. We can get this to the point where we can definitively say there is no magic number. Now, that could go a long way in helping to repeal statutes that have already been established in Washington and Colorado for a 5-nanogram limit. And statutes elsewhere in America that specify a 2-nanogram or a 1-nanogram or even a zero tolerance. We find any marijuana or metabolite in your system and you're guilty of a DUI. So don't fear these studies. Let's encourage these studies. We want more of these studies. And the other thing that's encouraging in this is when it says impaired by marijuana or prescription drugs. Because the prescription drugs, folks, a lot of those do have magic numbers. See, the ability for science to determine whether someone is too impaired based on some sort of chemical assay is based on how that drug, how that substance is metabolized by the body and how the metabolization of that substance then affects your physical and mental acuity. In the case of alcohol, it's a pretty clear case. With alcohol, you take X amount of alcohol divided by Y amount of body weight, and you will be too impaired. Now, there's variability. Some people have greater tolerance than others. But by and large, someone who's at a 0.15 shouldn't be driving, no matter how much of an alcoholic they may or may not be. Well, with some prescription drugs, there's a similar effect. Alcohol has a dose-dependent way of affecting people. And a dose-dependent just means that how impaired you are correlates with how much you take. The more you drink, the more fucked up you get. That it's pretty well established. And it's established that based on your body weight, X amount based on your body weight is going to be impairing. We can do that for some prescription drugs. We can say you take X amount of this or X amount of that, and there's going to be a problem. However, with some of these prescription drugs, and particularly talking about the opiates here, like marijuana, people can develop tolerances. I know people who are pain patients who are taking 6 or 7 full-strength Vicodin a day. I take 1 full-strength Vicodin, and I got to not make any plans. But these folks, they could drive on the stuff. They're not impaired by it because they've built up that tolerance. So in the long run, what I'm hoping for, out of these studies to determine how we're going to get a magic number to determine if someone's too high, is a recognition that the whole idea of magic number testing in the first place is suspect. Because if they find that not only with marijuana do people develop tolerances and therefore we can't come up with a fixed number, but we discover that with benzodiazepines, or we discover that with opioids, or we discover that with other sorts of drugs, and maybe we discover that drugs for which there's a magic number are actually in the small minority of drugs, maybe the whole concept gets thrown out or severely weakened. Maybe we can get back to this idea that determining whether or not someone is too impaired to drive a vehicle should be based on observations of how that person is driving their vehicle. I know it's a novel idea. It's a crazy concept to think that we might base charges of impairment based on observations of impairment. What a crazy idea that is. Depend on cops to do actual detective work, to do actual policing, to determine if someone's too impaired. I'm not a supporter of people being impaired drivers. But to the extent that marijuana is actually impairing anyone out there, I have serious doubts. I've been all over this country. I've met cannabis consumers at every level. And everywhere I've gone, I've known people to be not just smoking and then driving, but smoking while driving. And this is an uncomfortable truth that a lot of folks in the reform movement don't want to mention because it's politically unpalatable. But plenty of people smoke pot and drive. It's a very common thing in our culture. And it's not common because we're irresponsible. It's not common because we don't care about safety. It's not common because we want to see whether or not we can drive the wrong way down the freeway exit and not hit anybody for fun. It's because through our experience and the experience of everyone else in our community, we have come to learn that cannabis is not a serious factor in impairing people to the point they cannot drive. And to the extent that it is, people's judgment isn't impaired and they choose not to drive. How many more of these videotaped tests of cannabis consumers driving is it going to take? After Washington legalized in 2012, their local station did a driving test with 3 different cannabis consumers, an infrequent one, a frequent one, and a daily one. And that daily cannabis consumer was able to drive after numerous intermissions where she smoked pot. And her driving wasn't suspect to the driving instructor or the drug recognition expert police officer watching her from afar. Her driving was not suspect until she had reached 56 nanograms of active THC in her blood per milliliter. 56 nanograms. 11 times greater than what the state of Washington says is too impaired to drive. In fact, this girl showed up to the test before smoking anything. She showed up to the test at 15 nanograms per milliliter. So We know the numbers we have now are inaccurate and unscientific and don't represent people that have an actual problem with driving.
All we want to do is pump you up.
I know people don't want to admit it, but people are smoking pot and driving. If there was some serious problem with stoned drivers, we would have seen some mayhem on the freeways around the Summer of Love all the way through the late 1970s. It never materialized. Happy 420 to everyone here in the Pacific Time Zone. I'm Radical Russ. We'll take a break. We'll be back right after this.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
We have four times the incarceration rate on a percentage basis of any country in the world. In second place is New Zealand.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they aim you to say that.
Yes, I cannabis!
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you had yourselves a great safety briefing. It's 22 after the hour. Our phone lines are open at 650-LEGAL-MJ. If you got any comments, questions, concerns, or complaints for us to bring up here in hour two. In the meantime, I'm taking a look at a story coming out of Augusta, Maine. Associated Press is reporting that ham radio operators, you know what ham radio, right? The shortwave type radio, amateur radio that can go all the way around the globe. These ham radio operators, a great kind of hobby that people do. I don't know how ham radio has been affected since the internet has come into play. Back when I was a kid, I had a cousin who was big into the ham radio stuff because you could talk to people all around the world. And well, now you got the internet, so I don't know if there's an effect there, if it's changing. But apparently there's a lot of people still doing ham radio. And according to this story, they're kind of pissed off about marijuana legalization. There's a group, they're called the American Radio Relay League. This would be the group of ham radio operators, and they say that marijuana legalization is impacting their hobby because people are buying cheap ballasts for their indoor grows that give off too much electrical interference, too much wavelength interference, and it causes static and problems with the ham radio. Now, there's federal law around this, right? The FCC has rules, has laws about how much radio interference electrical devices can create. And the ham radio operators are saying that some of these cheap ballasts coming out of China and some other places will have these phony FCC stickers on them that supposedly, you know, mean that they're in compliance, but they're not. They're basically, you know, messing up the airwaves for these ham radio operators. And these are, you know, not just hobbyists necessarily, but they are backup communications for a lot of emergencies. You know, if the electrical grid grows down or the communication services fall, these guys can be backups. They have backup generators and stuff, and they're ham radio for communications. So these 166,000 members of this amateur radio relay league are worried that interference is just going to get worse because now Maine, where this story is out of, they've legalized marijuana and people can grow 6 flowering plants and 12 immature plants and unlimited seedlings. And they're worried because people get these ballasts for their lights and it's going to cause all this static. They've filed 4 complaints to the FCC, and complaints are trickling in from Maine, Colorado, and California so far. And a spokesman for the FCC, Will Wyquist, says they take these interference issues seriously and is sending warning letters, but has no further comment. The grow lamps, according to Bill Crowley of the Radio Relay League, says a grow lamp can be on and off for 12 hours at a time and powerful enough to produce the same amount of radio interference as a 1,000-watt AM radio station. The Radio Relay League's expert on radio interference is a guy named Mike Gruber. He says one cheap ballast sold by big box retailers produced 640 times the level of interference of a legal unit. 640 times beyond what's allowed by law. And another problem here is that while the FCC has a law on this, they've only got so much budget. They've only got so much manpower. So going after these manufacturers and these growers that are using these non-compliant ballasts is going to be difficult. Now, the some local governments are taking action on this. The city of Kalkaska, Michigan, began requiring medical marijuana growers to use FCC-compliant lighting equipment. In Maine, the Radio Relay League wants legislators to get the state to ban ballasts that produce radio frequency noise extending beyond the user's property. Now, some legislators say that might preempt federal law, and they think the federal government should be tackling this instead. But it's something, it's one of these unintended consequences of legalization that a lot of times we don't consider as we go into it. And that is, what is the effect of legalizing marijuana, but then banning people from growing it outside or creating such harsh requirements for outdoor grows that growing indoors is easier? Well, in doing so, you motivate people to buy all these high-intensity lights that use a lot of electricity and create a lot of static. So in legalizing marijuana, we now have to worry about environmental pollution, polluting the physical environment through the increased need for power that lights require, the carbon footprint that power production has to produce those plants. But now we also have to worry about electromagnetic pollution. We have to worry about this radio interference that the lights may cause. And when that kind of stuff comes up, that lends more fuel to the calls by some legislators to mandate home inspections for people that want to grow. Already there's a lot of call for that just based on the idea that there should be some electrical inspection before you start plugging in a bunch of lights. We've got to make sure that your circuit box can handle it, that you got enough good wiring and fuses and all the stuff you need there. And then maybe checkups on your security. How good is your security for your indoor grow? Do you have smoke detectors? Do you have fire extinguishers? Now just add this onto it. Do you have FCC-compliant lighting ballasts? This is going to be one of the difficult parts to get past in the evolution of legalization, this midpoint where marijuana had never been regulated, never been inspected, never been tested, never been secured. And so the people who are used to growing it are used to being left alone until the man shows up and hauls them away in handcuffs, of course. But other than that, left alone. No tax man, no inspector, no regulator, no paperwork. And now, as we move into the first states legalizing and these first systems that require testing and inspections and security and auditing and all of that, will increase the costs to the people trying to get legit, increase the hassle to the people trying to get legit, and in the long run, lead to higher prices than are necessary for the end customer. This could have a dual effect. This could have the effect of turning our people off to legalization, the ones who are trying to be growers, trying to be businessmen, by going, well, geez, man, back in the day when it was all illicit market, I didn't have to worry about all this crap. Where if marijuana is overtaxed, they'll say, hey, well, back in the day, I could sell marijuana and not have to pay taxes on it. Or now I could sell it for less than what these taxes are. We could see a situation where legalization creates so much overhead and regulation and problem that our side longs for a return to the way things used to be under the illicit market. And the more that happens, the more their side says, uh-huh, see, told you so, legalization doesn't work. See, the black market still exists. See, this is a very interesting point. And for us to be reaching this point at the same time we have a Trump and Sessions administration ready to pounce on that kind of stuff happening gives me the chills. I've been saying for the longest time that the success we've had with marijuana legalization is a very delicate thing that's poised on a razor's edge. That it would only take one serious, scandalous story, say a stoned bus driver wrecking with a bus full of kids, or some kids being harmed by eating edibles, and then that leads to some terrible fallout. We're only one moral panic away from this turning around on us. I've been saying that for a long time, and now we're in a situation where a lot of these facts are conspiring against our continued success, in my view. That's not to say that I think there's going to be a repeal of legalization. I think this is one of them two steps forward, one steps back kind of thing. We've made a lot of steps forward under Obama. Now there's going to be some steps back under Trump, but it won't be as far back as we used to be. They're not going to get rid of legalization. We're still going to have 8 states where people can possess weed and the state cops and the local cops won't do a thing about it. We're still going to have 7 states where people can grow their own marijuana and the cops and local officials aren't going to do anything about it. But what could happen is the shutdown of the state's commercial marijuana operations. And some people will point to that and they'll say, well, the worst thing that could happen is we all end up with Washington, D.C. style grow and give. And that's not necessarily a terrible outcome for the marijuana consumer. But for the friends of mine who've invested their entire life savings in starting a marijuana business or a grow, who've given up their old jobs and cashed in their 401ks to be able to raise the money to start these businesses, it's a huge deal if we go back to Washington, D.C., grow and give. It's a huge deal if they're served with subpoenas, if they're served with indictments, if they're brought up on federal charges that may lead to 5 or 10 or 20 year mandatory minimum sentences and felony records for the rest of their lives. The worst case scenario leading to Washington, D.C. style grow and give also leads to dozens and scores or even hundreds of people becoming federal felons. It's not much of a relief to hear that. I'd much rather that we keep on going like we're going. So what do we do about it? What are we going to do to prevent a rollback of our rights? Well, our state's attorneys general are starting to fight back. That's good news. Give them a call. Call your state's attorney general and tell them that states, not the federal government, should be deciding on marijuana policies. All right, when we come back, we got a couple more stories to wrap things up on this Tuesday, last day of February.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
People will smoke marijuana in pot stores right next to schools, daycare centers, and churches.
Okay, well, maybe you're high, too.
July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland Normal.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 38 after the hour. And there's a story out of Minnesota that I wanted to talk about. Really weird and tragic story. It's out of Litchfield, Minnesota, and it's a guy by the name of Thomas John Cunningham. He's 52 years old. He's charged with child neglect and obstruction in the case of his son and daughter's deaths almost a year ago. Now, here's what happened. His 52-year-old man went to his home. Thomas Cunningham went to his home, found his 17-year-old son had taken a gun and shot and killed the family dog, his 15-year-old daughter, and then shot and killed himself. So a murder-suicide. The 17-year-old takes a gun, kills the dog, kills the sister, and then kills himself. So the guy shows up, sees this has happened, calls 911 to report the murder-suicide. They ask him what went on. He said, I'd stop by this McDonald's to get lunch. Came home about 2:30, found the two kids and the dog dead. So what does this have to do with weed? Well, here's the deal. They've just uncovered a new wrinkle in this story. And that is that before the 52-year-old man called 911 over the murder-suicide, he had taken 8 pounds of marijuana out of the house and marijuana plants that he'd been growing and dumped them behind his property. The problem is when he dumped that stuff behind the property, he also dumped the McDonald's receipt. And the McDonald's receipt showed he had been to McDonald's almost 90 minutes before he said he had been to McDonald's. And they pulled up surveillance footage at the McDonald's and they confirmed this, that yeah, he was there around 1 in the afternoon when he said that he had stopped there at about 2:30. So the law enforcement believe that the man came home, found them dead, and then removed all the marijuana and paraphernalia from the home, loaded it all in his pickup truck, and dumped it behind the property. So that's why he's getting this obstruction of justice and child neglect charges filed against him. But the deeper, now, just on the marijuana part of the story, it reminds me that the prohibition of marijuana causes all sorts of problems with the accurate reporting of crime in this country. Here's a guy, here's a murder-suicide case that was allowed where the crime scene wasn't attended to for 90 minutes because of a guy having to hide his marijuana activity. Now, I'm not saying there would have been anything new to discover necessarily had the forensic scientists been there 90 minutes earlier, but maybe. Don't we want these crimes reported as quickly as possible? Don't we want the detectives on the scene as soon as possible? How many cases are there? And there's really no way to count this. You can't prove or quantify how often people don't do something. It's really difficult to. But how often does this something like this happen? Where somebody who would call 911 right now to report a robbery going on, a rape going on, arson, fire, murder, burglary, vandalism, where people would report that right now, they see it happening, they'd call 911 right now, except they got some weed in their pocket, or they got a pipe in their car, or they got a grow back at the house. They have that second thought of, oh, well, wait a minute, maybe I better not call 911. They'll ask what my name is. They'll want to know who I am. Cops might want to talk to me. They might smell weed on me. They might smell weed on my clothes. They might start asking questions about me. I just better not call 911. That happens every day in this country. I have no way to quantify how often it happens. I can tell you I've done it. I can tell you back in the 90s living in Idaho, there have been a couple of times where I would have called 911 except for the fact that I had paraphernalia and weed in my home. How often does a woman suffer domestic violence and a next door neighbor in the next apartment doesn't call because he's got weed in the house? Those are the kind of things that marijuana prohibition, the unintended consequences of marijuana prohibition. Now, as if that's not bad enough, I dig deeper into this story, right? And we find out that maybe this murder-suicide didn't have to happen. First of all, there's allegations that the daughter had mental health issues related to suicidal thoughts and behaviors. But that when he took his daughter to the counseling sessions, he told her not to talk about her suicidal thoughts. There's also allegations that the son had previously killed a different dog, had previously shot the ceiling of their home, and had previously pointed a firearm at another person. And yet, he was still allowed access to all the firearms in the home. How many firearms do you say? Well, according to the story, they found 20 guns and multiple boxes of ammunition in the home. 17 of those guns in the bedroom of the 17-year-old who shot his 15-year-old sister and the family dog. The same 17-year-old who had previously shot a different dog, allegedly, previously shot the ceiling of his home, allegedly, and previously pointed a gun at another person, allegedly. How does this house still have 20 guns in it? And I'm not even saying that the state needed to take those guns away. That's not my point. How did the father keep the 17 or 20 guns in that house after he's got a kid that's acting out like that? He's got one kid who's talking about suicide and another kid who's shooting and pointing guns, and he's keeping 20 guns in the house. So that's the story coming out of Minnesota, out of Grove City, Minnesota. And other charges that were filed against him include removal of a firearm's serial number, fifth-degree drug possession, and negligent storage of firearms. Wow, what a story. All right, one other story I wanted to get to. This one's coming out of Colorado.
Thank you for making KKCO a love news.
And let me play, I'm just going to play this one for you because I want to see if you have the same reaction to it that I do. NBC 11 is the station out of Colorado Springs. And just get a load of this.
Is at 6, the most watched newscast on the Western Slope. I'm Jean Reynolds. Glad to have you with us tonight. About 1 in 3 students use marijuana by the age of 14. According to a state health study last year, school officials are working on preventing efforts before students get to the 9th grade. KKCO 11 News reporter Carly Moore explains how one middle school is trying to combat the trend.
I was a little bit shocked at how prevalent it was in the middle school.
The hard truth.
There is marijuana use at Delta Middle School.
Has teachers trying to curb pot use among teens.
It's kind of an empowering lesson. Maybe there's adults in their lives that do use marijuana. That's an adult choice, and there's a way that they can see that they have a choice. Because sometimes I think a lot of them don't feel like they have a choice in a lot of things in their life.
Delta Middle School is one of 2 schools on the Western Slope participating in the Protect What's Next challenge, organized by the State Department of Health.
We give cards out, like one card for every student. There's 3 challenges on it, and you do one of the challenges, and then you take a picture or a video of you doing it, then you post it on any site like social media.
Students have been doing challenges all month.
We did one where we made a human pyramid, and we had 3 people at the bottom, 2 at the top, and I was at the way top.
Giving knuckles to a teacher and giving a piggyback ride to a kid to a class.
The point of the challenges are to get students to step out of their comfort zone, including standing up to peer pressure and drug use.
I think a lot of students, especially in middle school, because they are trying to fit in, find it difficult to stand up to peer pressure.
Students hope this can keep their peers from starting to use pot.
I don't know how many students do drugs. If I found out, it'd be important to talk to them about it.
Might be school pressure, or sometimes it could be at home what they're going through.
At Delta Middle School, Carly Moore, KKCO 11 News.
And the contest ends tomorrow. The winners will be announced March 13th. The state will choose the top schools based on the percent of students that participated, and the school that wins will get $10,000.
So this is, like I said, out of Colorado Springs, and the idea is supposed to be to help kids resist the peer pressure to use drugs, to use marijuana. So to do that, we're going to have a social media contest where they do human pyramids and give teachers piggyback rides. What? How about talking to the kids about marijuana? I fail to understand. I mean, it's cute, I guess. Get kids to do crazy things, but I fail to see how that's supposed to get them to understand how to stand up to peer pressure to use marijuana. Hey, kid, you want to smoke a joint? No, thanks. I want to do a human pyramid. Is that how it works? I mean, Hey, Bobby, come on. We're going to go smoke some reefer behind the school parking lot. Well, no thanks. I have to give a piggyback ride to my teacher. I don't know, man. It sounds to me like another one of these situations where they just don't want to talk about the facts. Because maybe they feel that the facts don't lend themselves to discouraging kids from trying marijuana. Right? They have to tell the kids the facts that marijuana is not really that dependence causing and doesn't cause terrible side effects and is a medicine that lots of people use. If they have to tell them all that, it's going to make it a whole lot harder to execute all those scare tactics that they execute all the time to try to scare the kids away from marijuana. Let's just tell them the truth. Tell them the truth and let them make their decisions. And if those decisions mean that some kids are using pot, even after we've told them the truth, then that's the way it is. This whole social media campaign sounds like a whole lot of... sounds like a committee got together and decided, hey, what do kids think is cool? Hey, they all like the Twitter. Let's do something there. They like the Facebook. Let's do something viral with a hashtag. That'll work.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Warning. Its taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
You're a loony.
A public service message from The Russ Belville Show. I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barak has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 53 after the hour as we're closing up shop here at Delta 9 Studios. A reminder that if you'd like to experience legal marijuana in Portland, Oregon, we have a room for you. No kidding, absolutely legit. You can stay here at Delta 9 Studios in our luxury appointed guest room for just $40 a night. Yeah, $40 a night or $200 a week. You can stay right here in Southeast Portland, easy on, easy off to our transit system to get downtown, to have all your fun, to see all the different pot shops and the fun that we got here in Portland. $40 a night. Just get in touch with me through email, radicalruss@gmail.com. The calendar's filling up quick, folks, so especially if you're wanting to stay here around the 420 holiday, you want to get right on that. So, just let me know, radicalruss@gmail.com. Our good friend and longtime listener to the show, Daniel from Florida, came out and stayed, had himself a great week, and enjoyed the sights, smells, and sounds and tastes of Portland. You could too. Email me, radicalruss@gmail.com, and we'll make your reservation happen. Also, looking forward to a couple of shows coming up here. Actually, the rest of this week, some pretty amazing shows. Tomorrow... And it's not It's not firmly booked yet, but I think it'll be firmly booked later this afternoon. Todd Mitchum, the former CEO of OpenVape and Hi There, he'll be joining us to discuss some of the most recent revelations about the Trump administration and their penchant for going after state legal marijuana. That's coming up on tomorrow's show, 1st of March. Then on Thursday, we revive our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment, but now that Law Enforcement Against Prohibition is Law Enforcement Action Partnership, we're going to be talking about police reform in general. So joining us to discuss that will be Patrick Nightingale. He's going to be talking about private prisons, the GEO Group and the Corrections Corporations of America, and how the private prison industry is set to explode now with the immigration crackdown and the drug war reboot under Attorney General Jeff Sessions. That's coming up on tomorrow's show, Cops Say Legalized Drugs, on Thursday. And then on Friday, a very special episode on Friday, because Friday will be my 900th show as an independent podcaster. Yeah, we started on June 4th, 2012. And this show coming up Friday will be the 900th episode I have done as an independent media personality, supported only by the sponsor ads you hear and your donations. Seriously, this is listener-supported cannabis media. And if you want to express your gratitude for 900 free shows that have come your way, you can do so by sending me money. Could always use money. The address is through PayPal at paypal.me/radicalruss. paypal.me/radicalruss. And if you send out some donations, you'll be included in our first round of VIP memberships that will be a part of the new radicalruss.com that we are still working on. In fact, the more money you send me, the quicker that will be up, because part of what I'm waiting for is enough money to be able to get the new thing launched. So, yeah, it's kind of a circle there. But if you can help out, the quicker you can help out, the quicker we can get the VIP thing back online. So that'll be a lot of fun. And coming up on March 17th, 18th, and 19th, I'm going to be out of town making my way to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Atlantic City, New Jersey. On the weekend, Bobby Platshorn is putting together the Meet the Experts 5 conference so that folks out on the East Coast can meet some of the best marijuana commerce experts on the planet. So I'll be there. Ian Sieb, Kevin Calavari from Denver Relief Consulting will be there. A bunch of others. So check it out if you're on the East Coast. You can find out more information at meetexperts.org. meetexperts.org. And the day before that, Thursday, March 16th, I will set a new record for most shows produced. It'll be my 909th show on Thursday, March 16th, show number 909. That will be one more than the 908 shows that I produced for Normal from 2008 through 2012. So we enter brand new territory starting in a couple of weeks from Thursday, 909 shows and beyond. So that means my 1,000th show, I was doing the calculations earlier today, 1,000th show should happen probably right around Seattle Hemp Fest or Boston Freedom Rally. And that's dependent on how much travel I've got going on and how many shows I'll miss between now and then. Can you believe it? 1,000 shows? Who knew there was so much to say about cannabis? Well, I did, but who else, right? That's all the time we got for today's show. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios in beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ, wishing you the best in harvests and very little in police interactions. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
The Russ Belville Show, providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.